And then when my mind starts whining and thinking about how hard it is for me to help others, oh, I have to travel so far to help others. And they don't even appreciate it. Or I do so much and they don't say thank you. No. I help them so much, the least they could do is make a poster saying you're the greatest one in the world. That's the least they could do. Don't you know? Doesn't your mind kind of think that sometimes? Yeah. And then I ask myself, have I done that for the people who have helped me? Do I show appreciation to the people who have helped me? Or do I act like a little child saying, help me more, I want more, give me this, give me that. You know? How appreciative am I? Well, I have a long way to go there. Okay. So when I look at what my mind is complaining about that others aren't giving me, then I have to ask myself, do I give it to others? Do I appreciate what others give to me? Do I praise other people's good qualities? No, I get jealous of their good qualities. I don't want them to have good qualities because then they're better than me. I want to be the best. Yeah. So if I look, you know, why do I expect others to praise me if I don't put myself out and praise them and acknowledge what they do well? And why am I complaining that they don't appreciate me if I look around me and I don't appreciate what other people have done for me? I mean, even our parents, do you go home and say thank you to your parents? How many of you have said thank you to your parents for having you? Think about it. Do you ever go and say, Mom, Dad, thank you so much for having me? You know? Thank you. Do you ever go, thank you for waking up in the middle of the night and feeding me for 3 years when I was a baby? Have you ever thanked your parents for that? Did you ever thank your parents for toilet training you? That was a big kindness, wasn't it? Yeah? Or did you thank your parents for teaching you how to have manners? Now, there's just so many basic things that we learn from our family, and yet we very seldom think to actually thank them. One time I was doing retreat. Sometimes, actually, when I do retreat, I write a thank you letter to my parents in the retreat and send it to them. You know, just thanking them for all those very simple things that they did on a daily basis that I never thought to thank them for, that I always took for granted. Okay? So we start off thanking our parents, and then thank our brothers and sisters, and then thank our teachers. Thank our friends, even thank our enemies. Thank the people who have harmed us. Because through their harm, we've grown and we've discovered inner talents and resources that we didn't know we had. Okay? So training our mind to show appreciation to others for what they've done for us. And you know what's amazing? Is the more we train our mind to show appreciation to others, the less we pay attention to if others say thank you to us. Because we're more focused on others and on being of benefit and less focused on what ego wants. Another thing that I do when I feel my energy for volunteer work is lessening. And especially when I face difficulties, you know, when you're doing some volunteer work and there's a big problem, like maybe you're not getting along with the other colleagues that you're working with, or maybe you have some idea but you can't enact it because the other people don't want to do it, or, you know, you're volunteering and somebody criticizes you or something. So when there's some problem, then one thing that I find helpful to think about is to say that this problem is training me to be a bodhisattva. Okay? Because if I think, you know, think about it, I'm not a bodhisattva yet. For a bodhisattva, this problem wouldn't even seem like a problem because bodhisattvas have so much compassion. You know, they wouldn't even see what I'm going, you know, through as a problem if they were in my shoes. So somehow I have to train my mind to be able to endure discomfort and train my mind to not get aggravated because of suffering. And so when difficulty comes in the volunteer work, to just say, this is part of my training. I'm not going to be able to be a bodhisattva unless I'm able to really find a way to have a peaceful, happy mind in these difficult circumstances. Because whenever you're trying to help sentient beings, there's going to be problems, isn't there? You know, and much bigger problems than the problems we're facing right now. So whatever problems we have, you know, these are situations to train us, to develop our inner strength, to help us come up with creative solutions to problems, to help us continue to be compassionate, even when people aren't grateful. Okay? There are situations that help us learn that saying no can be an act of compassion. That compassion doesn't just mean that you do everything everybody wants, but sometimes compassion means saying no and risking the other person being angry at you. Because there are some situations where the most compassionate thing to do is being real tough with the other person. And they may not like you for it. And they may criticize you, and they may gossip behind your back and ruin your reputation. But you have to have the courage to do that because you know that that's the best thing in the situation for them. So then, you know, I see all these kinds of things as, okay, this is just an opportunity to train so that I can develop those qualities of a bodhisattva. Yeah, I've got to get there somehow. And the situation in front of my nose is my training ground. Because sometimes we just, you know, we read in the sutras of these fantastic stories and we think, oh, someday I'm going to be a bodhisattva like that. I'm going to go to the lowest hell for the benefit of one sentient being, you know. And so we pray, you know, oh, may I go to the lowest hell for the benefit of sentient beings, because we're so filled with compassion when we're meditating. And then there's one sentient being afterwards who's not even in the hell realm, who wants our help. It's so inconvenient. You know, I can't help you now. Why don't you just do it yourself? You know, we're so grumpy. And then to remember, hey, wait a minute, you know, if I'm going to go to the hell realm to help one sentient being, first I have to learn how to help this guy right here asking me to do something simple, you know. Let's get off my, you know, my big dream and let's start being a little bit practical here. And, you know, let's just start with simple things and the things that are inconvenient or the things where I don't have so much self-confidence that I can really do it. Well, you know, I have to develop a self-confidence. Okay? Self-confidence is extremely important. You can't, you know, bodhisattvas don't have self-esteem problems. Yeah? Bodhisattvas aren't shy like, oh, I can't do that. I'm incompetent. I don't know how to do that. That's scary. You know, bodhisattvas aren't like that. Bodhisattvas are willing to just jump in. So similarly, you know, we shouldn't just have this very timid mind that, oh, I can't learn that, I can't do that, you know. And sometimes, you know what that mind is? It's a mind that's afraid of looking like a jerk, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, I can't go do that because I might say something stupid. And then my reputation, what's going to happen to it? I don't want to look like a fool in front of everybody. You know, so we're so attached to our reputation and what we're going to look like that we miss an opportunity to be of benefit to somebody else. Yeah? So then we just play little sweetie that's very shy. Yeah? No, that's foolish. That's stupid. Okay? You know, we should have some self-confidence. And if we don't know how to do something, then, you know, try and learn how to do it. You know? And don't feel like totally helpless because you can't. But just try and learn. And try and use your talents. And, you know, don't just sit in the back of the room and, you know, be shy. But, you know, go out and do something. Yeah. So any situation that we encounter in our life is the opportunity to develop these bodhisattva qualities. And so especially in our volunteer work, you know, these situations present themselves and they're all just, you know, little mini training grounds to help us develop the qualities of a genuine bodhisattva. So take advantage of these opportunities. Okay, now I want to talk just a little bit about some of the kinds of volunteer work I do, because that might, you know, give you some idea. Some of the things that I do, I've done some hospice work, you know, with people who are dying. But probably, and I do spiritual counseling for people and stuff like that. But one of the biggest engaged Buddhism things I do is prison work. Okay, so corresponding with inmates, going into prisons, talking to prison groups, talking to individual inmates. And I had never ever intended to do prison work. Because I don't know about you, but in my upbringing, you know, it's like prisoners are really bad people. You know, they're bad people, they're evil people, they did something really awful that wound themselves up in prison. You don't trust them, you don't go near them. Prisons are scary places. Okay? And, I mean, especially U.S. prisons, there's an incredible amount of violence in prison. You know, you never think of just, you think you lock the people up and throw them away. But, you know, it's not paradise in prison. So I never intended to do prison work. But one day, back in maybe 1997, I received a letter from one inmate. And, you know, when you've taken bodhisattva vows, then when somebody asks you for help, you don't have a choice. You know, you've already taken the bodhisattva vows. You've already made up your mind. So, okay, some inmate writes to me, I gotta do something. I can't get out of it. So it's a good point. The good thing about bodhisattva vows, you know, they really put you right up there against all your fear and your lack of compassion. So I started corresponding with this one inmate. And you know what's very strange is later on I asked him, how did you get my contact? And he said, well, I wrote to about 25 Buddhist organizations. And then he went back and he looked at the list of Buddhist organizations that he wrote to. The one I belonged to was not on his list. So we have no idea really how his letter found its way to me. Interesting story, but it did, and I responded. And then I started getting letters from other inmates. And again, I don't even know how all of them find my address. One guy told me that his cellie, the guy that he shares his cell with, moved and left a book there. And he didn't open the book for 4 years. And one day he opened the book, and it was Pearl of Wisdom, our prayer book. And he found my address in it, and he wrote. Yeah. So, I don't know. Anyway, these people find my address, and they write. And then, I write back. And it's been one of the most rewarding things that I've done is this prison work. I have learned so much from the inmates. I can't tell you. It looks like I'm the one who's helping them, but let me tell you, they're the ones who are helping me. Yeah, they're the ones who are teaching me. There's so much I learned from doing this kind of work. Okay, what do I learn? First of all, it's completely shattered all of my images about how inmates are evil people. Completely blown to smithereens, that whole thing. And it's helped me tremendously in the equanimity meditation. Because the whole point of the equanimity meditation is to get rid of attachment to friends, aversion to enemies and people we don't like, and apathy towards everybody else. Well, dealing with inmates, has helped me overcome the attachment, aversion, and apathy, because I've had to, these are real living beings that I'm interacting with. And some of the guys that I write to have done the crimes that terrify me the most. Now, you might each think of what kind of crime is the one that's scariest to you if it were to be done to you. Yeah? And I correspond with the guys who have done the crimes that are the most scary for me. And it's pushed me to overcome this limited mind of just putting somebody in a category and then discarding them. Yeah. And so that's why I said it's been such help for my meditation on equanimity, because I can't just put these people in categories and throw them in the garbage, because they're writing to me sincerely asking for help and for spiritual guidance. And so I don't have a choice. I have to reach out and help them. And when I do, I discover that they are human beings with feelings, just like me, and that their lives are more than one crime that they did. That they've had very full lives, that they have incredible stories to tell. Some of these guys have amazing wisdom you can't believe. And if you're really trying to understand about how people's minds work, I ask the inmates, please explain to me how your mind got to the point where it could commit that crime. And I tell you, they can answer those kind of questions much better than studying sociology at a university. I mean, you go to the people who have experienced it. And instead of, studying it, your nice, clean university course about all the poor people who live in the street, go to a prison and talk to some of the inmates who have come from very poor families. No, one guy that I work with has been living on the streets since he was 12 years old. No, there's 9 kids in his family. They all have different fathers. And none of them finish secondary school. No. So you meet somebody like this and you say, tell me about your life. What's your life experience? Wow, you learn so much. And then it brings forth so much compassion because you're really hearing it from somebody, a real live human being who's telling you about their experience. Yeah, much better than any university study, I tell you. So, there's just so many ways in which the inmates have helped me and have taught me. So, they always, say thank you to me, but I always say no, I'm the one who has to thank you. And so if you go to the website, tuptonchildren.org, there's a whole section about the prison work. And I put on the website some of the things that the guys tell me, just in correspondence, just in the letters, because I think that there's a lot of wisdom in it and that can help other people. And you ask them, how do you practice Dharma in prison? All of you, how hard it is to have a regular daily practice, don't you? There's always an excuse why you can't sit down and meditate, right? Yeah? Oh, I'm too busy, I'm hungry, it's too noisy, I'm too tired. We have all our excuses, right? Why we can't practice. Yeah. So then you ask the guys in prison, because think about a prison environment, You say at home, I can't practice, it's too noisy. Do you have any idea how noisy prisons are? Yeah, prisons are so noisy, incredibly noisy. Yeah, because there's just steel and concrete. There's nothing that absorbs the sound. You have some people in there who belong in mental institutions, but they're locked up in prison and they're not given the help that they need, at least in my country. Yeah, our prison system is horrible. It's incredibly noisy. They're shouting, they're screaming. You have, maybe 300 people living in one dormitory room. Or you have a cell with just you and one other guy. The other guy's playing the television all day. And then the guards are, looking in your cell. You have absolutely no privacy. Somebody's looking in your cell, watching you every single moment of the day. Now, so think about how hard it is to practice in that kind of condition. And then you read about these guys and they really make an effort. Some of them will wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning because that's the quietest time in the prison just so that they can do a little bit of meditation. And they'll do their meditation very regularly. And you read about what they do and it goes, you go, wow, if they can do that, why can't I? So what I'm getting at is when you do volunteer work, there's an opportunity for learning that you don't have in other situations. That the people you help, whether you're teaching at PKS Sunday School or whether you're volunteering to do the accounting in a charitable organization, or whether you're working with people who are dying or people who are sick or people who are poor, or if you're doing publishing of Dharma books for free distribution, whatever you're doing, you're going to meet people that you wouldn't normally meet in your life, and you're going to have the opportunity to learn from them about their lives in a way that is very personal and very, very precious, that you won't have an opportunity to learn like that in another situation. Okay? So really take advantage of it and learn from the people. And then you really see how much they're helping you, not you helping them. Yeah, it's quite remarkable. Okay, so that's just a little bit about, you know, how to maintain your motivation, how to keep on going. You know, and of course, in, you know, when you're working with other people in a volunteer organization, there's going to be times when you all have different ideas about how to do things. There's going to be times when you don't all get along. But, you know, you try and communicate with the other people. You try, you meet together, you express yourself, you discuss. Now, if you're having difficulty with what you're doing, talk to somebody else. Ask them for help. Don't feel like you're all alone. And if you're having difficulty getting along with somebody, or if you have doubts about how the organization is running, say something. Nothing's going to change if you don't say something. Yeah, that doesn't mean you need to criticize and rant and rave, but in a meeting you can say, you know, we've been doing this and I have some questions. I'm wondering about what would happen if we did that instead of doing this. You know, so you give suggestions, you put forth questions, but try and really communicate with the people that you're volunteering with and resolve any kind of difficulties that you might have had. And like I said, ask for help when you need help. Don't feel like you have to do everything alone. Anyway, those are just some ideas. What I'd like to do is pause now and give you some space to ask some questions and make some comments.